his first in ages. He felt the familiar rush of fearlessness. He pulled out a handgun, used an old key to unlock the door, and stepped inside. "Hello, Solomons." Unfortunately, the night had not gone as Andros had planned. Rather than obtaining the pyramid for which he had come, he found himself riddled with birdshot and fleeing across the snow-covered lawn toward the dense woods. To his surprise, behind him, Peter Solomon was giving chase, pistol glinting in his hand. Andros dashed into the woods, running down a trail along the edge of a deep ravine. Far below, the sounds of a waterfall echoed up through the crisp winter air. He passed a stand of oak trees and rounded a corner to his left. Seconds later, he was skidding to a stop on the icy path, narrowly escaping death. My God! Only feet in front of him, the path ended, plunging straight down into an icy river far below. The large boulder at the side of the path had been carved by the unskilled hand of a child. Zack's Bridge. On the far side of the ravine, the path continued on. So where's the bridge? The cocaine was no longer working. I'm trapped. Panicking now, Andros turned to flee back up the path, but he found himself facing Peter Solomon, who stood breathless before him, pistol in hand. Andros looked at the gun and took a step backward. The drop behind him was at least 50 feet to an ice-covered river. The mist from the waterfall upstream billowed around them, chilling him to the bone. Zack's bridge rotted out long ago, Solomon said, panting. He was the only one who ever came down this far. Solomon held the gun remarkably steady. Why did you kill my son? He was nothing, Andros replied. A drug addict. I did him a favor. Solomon moved closer, gun aimed directly at Andros's chest. Perhaps I should do you the same favor. His tone was surprisingly fierce. You bludgeoned my son to death. How does a man do such a thing? Men do the unthinkable when pushed to the brink. You killed my son. No, Andros replied, hotly now. You killed your son. What kind of man leaves his son in a prison when he has the option to get him out? You killed your son, not me. You know nothing, Solomon yelled, his voice filled with pain. You're wrong, Andros thought. I know everything. Peter Solomon drew closer, only 5 yards away now, gun leveled. Andros's chest was burning, and he could tell he was bleeding badly. The warmth ran down over his stomach. He looked over his shoulder at the drop. Impossible. He turned back to Solomon. I know more about you than you think, he whispered. I know you are not the kind of man who kills in cold blood. Solomon stepped closer, taking dead aim. I'm warning you, Andros said. If you pull that trigger, I will haunt you forever.
You already will.
And with that, Solomon fired. As he raced his black limousine back toward Kalorama Heights, the one who now called himself Malach reflected on the miraculous events that had delivered him from certain death atop that icy ravine. He had been transformed forever. The gunshot had echoed only for an instant, and yet its effects had reverberated across decades. His body, once tanned and perfect, was now marred by scars from that night, scars he kept hidden beneath the tattooed symbols of his new identity. I am Malach. This was my destiny all along. He had walked through fire, been reduced to ashes, and then emerged again, transformed once more. Tonight would be the final step of his long and magnificent journey. Chapter 58. The coyly nicknamed explosive Key 4 had been developed by special forces specifically for opening locked doors with minimal collateral damage. Consisting primarily of cyclotrimethylene trinitramine with diethylhexyl plasticizer, it was essentially a piece of C4 rolled into paper-thin sheets for insertion into door jams. In the case of the library's reading room, the explosive had worked perfectly. Operation leader Agent Turner Simpkins stepped over the wreckage of the doors and scanned the massive octagonal room for any signs of movement. Nothing. Kill the lights, Simpkins said. A second agent found the wall panel, threw the switches, and plunged the room into darkness. In unison, all four men reached up and yanked down their night vision headgear, adjusting the goggles over their eyes. They stood motionless, surveying the reading room, which now materialized in shades of luminescent green inside their goggles. The scene remained unchanged. Nobody made a dash for it in the dark. The fugitives were probably unarmed, and yet the field team entered the room with weapons raised. In the darkness, their firearms projected four menacing rods of laser light. The men washed the beams in all directions, across the floor, up the far walls, into the balconies, probing the darkness. Oftentimes, a mere glimpse of a laser-sighted weapon in a darkened room was enough to induce instant surrender. Apparently not tonight. Still no movement. Agent Simpkins raised his hand, motioning his team into the space. Silently, the men fanned out. Moving cautiously up the center aisle, Simpkins reached up and flipped a switch on his goggles, activating the newest addition to the CIA's arsenal. Thermal imaging had been around for years, but recent advances in miniaturization, differential sensitivity, and dual-source integration had facilitated a new generation of vision-enhancing equipment that gave field agents eyesight that bordered on superhuman. We see in the dark, we see through walls, and now we see back in time. Thermal imaging equipment had become so sensitive to heat differentials that it could detect not only a person's location, but their previous locations. The ability to see into the past often proved the most valuable asset of all. And tonight, once again, it proved its worth. Agent Simpkins now spied a thermal signature at one of the reading desks. The two wooden chairs luminesced in his goggles, registering a reddish-purple color, indicating those chairs were warmer than the other chairs in the room. The desk lamp's bulb glowed orange. Obviously, the two men had been sitting at the desk, but the question now was in which direction they had gone. He found his answer on the central counter that surrounded the large wooden console in the middle of the room, a ghostly handprint, glowing crimson. Weapon raised, Simpkins moved toward the octagonal cabinet, training his laser sight across the surface. He circled until he saw an opening in the side of the console. Did they really corner themselves in a cabinet? The agent scanned the trim around the opening and saw another glowing handprint on it. Clearly someone had grabbed the door jamb as he ducked inside the console. The time for silence was over.
Thermal signature, Simpkins shouted, pointing at the opening. Flanks converge.
His two flanks moved in from opposite sides, effectively surrounding the octagonal console. Simpkins moved toward the opening. Still 10 feet away.